This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Tech, show number 157, recorded on March 6th, 2014. Here at Home Tech, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios. We're back 2 weeks ago. We were at the Gallup studios, burning those in, and we are back at the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska, and we post the show with world-class show notes each week out at the AverageGuy.tv. If you have questions, comments, or contributions, you can contact the show, send me an email. Send that to Jim at theaverageguy.tv. You can find me very easily on Twitter, at theaverageguy. I'm sorry, that's not the one to use, at Jay Collison. Or you can use at theaverageguy.tv if you want. But now you can even call in those questions. And tonight we have two of those call-ins that we'll play for you. So you can call in those questions, 402-478-8450. I'll put that in the show notes as well if you want to go back and get that. And we will play your questions or comments. Tonight's doesn't necessarily have a question associated with them, just a comment. On a past show, you can call those in as well. And now Home Tech is a part of the Geeks Network. You can find links to shows like this and many other great podcasts all out at the Geeks Network. It is just thegeeksnetwork.com. Although Dave is still working on that site, so if you go out there, it's still a little plain at the moment. Dave, let's get that site fixed. All right. Join us in chat. You can join us in chat, listen, watch, or listen to the show, all the navigation for it. We do have a Live 2 option available for you as well in the upper right-hand corner out at theaverageguy.tv. All right, we got a good show for you tonight. Looking forward to it. We got a brand new guest as well as one returning, and I'm excited about some of the content that we have for you this evening. And so let's get right to it. I want to introduce you to Bill Rockhold. Bill has been around the community for a long time, I think. Well, many of you might know him from the various just piping in or from the forums that he's in. But, Bill, welcome to the show. Good to have you.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
You bet. Did you start listening to a home server show first or home tech?
A home server.
Yeah, of course. It's been a long time. And are you out? Do you spend much time in the home server show forums?
I check it at least once a day. Okay. I don't post a lot, but... I tried not to be just one of those, me too kind of guys.
Yeah.
I try to, if like I have who, something to say, I will to. Say it. Otherwise, I keep quiet.
Yeah, it's a good forums. If people are listening to the show maybe for the first time, if you go to homeservershow.com/forums, I think some of the best forums I've ever been a part of. They are moderated very well, and right now they are rocking with the Gen 8 information and a lot of home server stuff. I think we're getting more home server chat over there than we got when the home server was still a product. And so what do you go by in the forums over there?
Axoid.
Okay. All right. Very good. And tell us, since this is the first time that we've met you, tell us kind of like where you're from and what you do, anything you're comfortable sharing.
Okay. From Columbus, Ohio. Software developer for Cardinal Health. And part-time race car driver.
Really? What do you like to race?
It's mostly time trials, autocross, road race style racing. Okay. I have Chevy Camaro that I run.
Like cars like that's behind you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Very cool.
Although mine's a newer generation than that one.
What's the fastest you've ever gone? What have you clocked?
Fastest that I know I've done is 130.
Okay. How'd that feel?
It was a little intimidating, especially when realized I was doing 130, and the Corvette in front of me was braking in the middle of the fastest part of the track because someone pulled off the course, and it basically turned the fastest part of the track into a parking lot.
Yowza.
And I'm trying to find out, okay, where can I go without hitting anybody and totally wrecking my car in the process?
Yeah, that is a little scary. I'll be honest with you. We, back in the 80s when I was stationed in Germany, we were on the Autobahn, and I was in an 88 Ford Mustang. And they weren't really built for speed. They look cool, but they weren't really built for speed. And at about 115, you could feel the back end lift up on that. I mean, I was sitting in the back seat, and you could feel the car to lift. And I'm like, we might want to slow down a little bit. just saying. I'm not sure this car. Now, on the other hand, we rented a Mercedes while we were there one time, and that car faster you go, the lower that thing gets to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it was dynamite. But yeah, that kind of speed can be a little intimidating.
Yeah, that's one thing. I mean, I have a BMW as well, and that's one thing about them is that they not only arrow the outside of the car, they arrow the underside of the car too.
Right. Yeah, to get it to hug down, right? So to hold those tires on the Autobahn, because that's important. You don't want that car going flying off, for sure. So we'll have to get you and Bill Pullman together, and we'll have to do a car tech show. And do you get much into the tech that's into the cars, or is it pretty much just racing? Are they stripped down?
Well,
is it stock?
Well, most of what I do, you strip them down. But, yeah, I have an interest in the tech in cars. Just that I generally try to keep my cars low on the tech scale, because I've driven cars with, I mean, all the GPS and like iDrive and the BMWs. It's too much. I mean, they're putting, in my opinion, they're putting too much tech in cars. And I mean, they complain about people getting distracted by cell phones, and they put 5 to 7 inch displays in these cars, and you expect people not to look at them.
Right. Yeah, they're getting embedded in there kind of permanently. Now, did the chat room wants to know, did you wreck on that?
Have not wrecked my car. I've spun it a few times. I've taken it off into the grass sideways and things like that. But, no, I've never bent a fender or put any damage on the car. But I've had a few close calls.
Yeah, that's another thing in that Mustang. We got loose. We were coming out of a construction zone, and the guy punched it, and the back end got loose. And that's a weird feeling when you know the tires are spinning forward, but you are going backwards somehow. And and then we ran right into a guardrail and just took the back end completely off the car. So it was.
I've seen some cars coming off the track that way.
Yeah, pretty scary indeed. Well, if you survive this podcast, we'll try and get you back on and then trying to get his lower third up. And Kyle, you actually don't need to do that. We're scrapping lower thirds, so you can pop that thing off. Is because it just takes up too much real estate on the screen. So, is Kyle Wilcox, and of course we know Kyle is our phone resident phone guy, and actually we've got some mobile phone stuff to talk about tonight. I'm pretty excited about it because my Android kind of crapped out this week and I had to do some things to get it fixed, but Kyle, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Good to have you. Okay, let's dive right in. Bill, the reason you're here, the reason we invited you on the show, is to talk a little bit about, you did a hands-on review for me, part of the Average Guy Scholarship Fund, so you contacted me. And you can do that, by the way. We've got some really good funds. You guys have been very good about using theaverageguy.tv/Amazon to purchase things. And so I've got a little bit of a kitty over there right now at Amazon, and if there's something that you wanted to try out, we actually have that. In fact, I'd have to go back and see. We ordered a component to be able to record digitally off of VCR and move that on so folks could rip those or get them digitally done. That's one of those products we're going to move around, but like Bill, he contacted me and said, hey, I got this idea. There's this RAV Power File Hub. It's a wireless. It's kind of a wireless everything, Bill. It's an amazing device. As I started looking at your review, I was kind of like wondering, does it have a switchblade in it and a screwdriver?
That's not the only thing it doesn't have.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in it. Why don't you talk a little bit about it?
Well, if you can see, here's the little device itself. I don't know if it's coming over the monitor very well.
No, you're good. I'm gonna actually put your camera in focus so it stays there so we don't lose you. Yeah.
Well, it is a little device about the size of a cell phone. Right now I'm using a memory stick to run it. You can also run SD cards in it. And it basically, you turn it on, once it boots up, it becomes a hotspot. And you can then connect any kind of mobile device, iOS, Android, even PC. Right now the PC that I'm on is actually hooked onto it at the moment. And you can then go in to administer it, or you can also just view files or even from a PC edit files on it as if it's a hard drive, which
now
it is.
You're holding that thing around like it's not very
heavy. Well, it's not very heavy. It isn't.
But it I mean, that's a pretty light in the memory. How big of a stick is there? And I assume that's your storage that's on there, right?
Yeah. Right now, this is just a 4 gig stick.
Okay.
I've been running a 128 gig stick with it, But if I demo it and pull up the files, I didn't want them to see all these movies and stuff like that. So there's a video file on here, but it's mine that I actually own. So
sure. So
MPAA can't get mad at me.
Point the no, it's okay. Well, you're allowed one backup. Point the front of it. So it's got some it's got some up front. So you've got the USB, and then that other slot is for what?
The other slot, that is for the SD card slot.
Okay. And just a standard SD, or will it take?
Yeah, it will take a standard SD card. And then on this side, you have a micro USB port, which is for charging, and the power button. And then you just have some monitor lights on the front.
And it's got a battery in it, right? I mean, it's got a pretty good battery.
I'm not pulling, I'm remembering the exact milliamps, but somewhere around 3,500 to 4,000 milliamp battery in it.
Yeah, it's a 3,000.
Okay.
3,000 milliamps, which is pretty good. You know, we reviewed that.
It actually says it on the back now.
We reviewed that Power Rocks, the little battery pack that's like a cigarette, you know, or like a cigar length. Mm-hmm. And that thing's 2,800 milliamps, and that's a little, it's bigger than that. And so for them to get 3,000 milliamps in there, not a bad, you know, you could charge your cell phone off of it, right?
Give me an idea. This is a GS3.
Yeah. No, good size. Yeah. So you talked about sharing a little bit of what that looks like, and for the admin on the screen, are you ready to do a little
screen sharing and see what we get here?
So, and Loft is asking, I assume that takes the SDHC, the new high capacity cards that go in the.
To be honest, I haven't used an SD card in it. I would believe that it will support the newer cards.
Okay. Yeah, I would think so.
So, honestly, I haven't had anything in an SD card actually in the thing. I've always been using USBs.
And the links for all of this will be out at theaverageguy.tv/HT157 if you're listening to this later after it, and including the review that Bill did and the link to the actual device. Oh, go back to your screen, Bill.
Okay.
You did well to get the screen up there.
Okay, there. Here we have, this is the admin screen where you administer the application. You have your administration user, and we have the disks. In this particular one, you're seeing the 4 gig SD card in it. And let's see, network settings, you have host name. It comes up with some weird encrypted or cryptic name by default. I changed the file up because that's easier to understand when you pull up on the screen of a device and say, oh, there's the file hub. I'm just hit that and see if some cryptic WDSD whatever it used to be. I can't remember what it was now. Here are settings, and here's my great password.
Which you'll change after the evening.
I don't know. I probably won't, because I wanted to keep it simple enough so that the 9-year-old who uses it most remembers it.
Just for that's not to get onto your Wi-Fi. That's just the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, this is for connecting to the device.
Right.
The connection to my Wi-Fi is on this, and this is where it routes you back to my own home Wi-Fi if it's a here at home. So you have a device and you connect to the file hub, it can then reroute you through the file hub back to your home network so that you can still browse the internet through your device while you're accessing the information on it.
So it kind of repeats the signal for you.
Mm-hmm. But they don't advertise router functionality, so couldn't guarantee you that it. I doubt it has any kind of real router or firewall type functionality into it. So
right, nor would you want to use it that way.
Yep. And I think the browser just crapped out because it's not responding now.
Just refresh it. See if that brings it back to life.
Yep. There we go.
There we go.
We got services, which basically it only has one service on it. And there's, as far as I know, there's no way to download anything else. Maybe they've put that in there in case maybe they're going to may do a firmware update sometime in the future, add something else to it. But
Bill, when you run that thing, so when you've got something connected to it and you're maybe streaming a movie to it, does it get pretty warm, the device itself? That's been one of the complaints that we've had with some of these kinds of devices is they get really warm. Did you notice that at all?
No, not with this. Not while it's just powering itself.
Okay.
I haven't tried it with like an USB hard drive. That since that would pull more current, that might work it harder. But I mean, this 3,000 amp battery pack will run this for 2 or more hours. Actually, no, they're running about close to 6 hours. I remember.
Yeah, is it? And is that USB 3, that USB port?
No, I believe it's USB 2.
USB 2, and will it power the hard drive
I have tested that. Put a USB hard drive on it, and it would spin up the drive.
Yeah, there you go. That's why the chat room is saying that's why it has a 3,000 milliamp or 3 amp battery in it. I think that's handy to have that battery in there as well. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times I needed a quick phone charger, you know, charge to the phone, and it would be, this is something I was carrying around or I had with me, be nice to have.
So, and this is the last little feature here where it actually will allow you to explore the contents of your drives. Although this isn't how you actually access to play it. This is just viewing it. Now, if I switch to another app I got running on here.
That actually showed up pretty well.
There it is. And this may be a little slow. And this is an actual Android tablet. And it's streaming the video through a USB cord back to the computer.
Okay, so how are you doing this? How are you showing us this?
Well, it's in kind of a developer mode, and I found an app that allowed me to start up, and it doesn't work with the GS3 for some reason right now, and I think there's some driver issues.
Okay.
But I have an old Acer tablet, and I just plugged it in, and it worked right off.
And what's the name of the app?
Oh, let me see. Now, you figure you'd ask me this.
it's okay. If it comes in a second, that's fine, too. But that's pretty cool.
Droid at Screen. It was some developer came up with this little Java-based app to do this.
Okay.
And it's nothing commercial. Just something I happened to find on YouTube and downloaded, and it worked. And
very cool.
I had tried several other things, trying to run emulators on my PC to be able to do this, and none of them would do Wi-Fi, so I ended up finding this and went with it.
And I need something like that. I'm doing a class, and I'm trying to show some apps that the kids have made, and this would be perfect for that. I might talk to you a little bit about this offline.
Okay. AirStore is the app that you want to use. It's what you can download from the market. And it is trying to connect, and there you see the volume that the USB stick that I have on here, and you just open that up, and it takes a second. I'm not sure how this is going to do on video. It's probably going to be horrible.
Yeah, it probably won't be great, but we'll try it anyways, just to see how it goes.
And you open up the thing, it'll ask you which player you want to use.
If this kicks you off of a Google Hangout, just call back.
It shouldn't.
I'll call you back, yeah.
And I have video.
Yeah, we see a little bit here. I would imagine it's not going to keep up for what we're displaying out.
Yeah, I think this app snapshots the screen and feeds the single image across. So I don't think it's streaming the video real time. I think it's just snapshotting it every second or so.
Probably would you want it to, you know. Yeah.
So
no, that's cool though. Okay. Well, I mean, it shows that it works from in from your standpoint. It was streaming video to that device when you weren't sharing it with us.
Mm-hmm.
That's very cool.
So that was basically
Did you try?
I mean, there's a bunch of features they have in this app, but I just won't go into all those.
Sure.
Keep this short and sweet. Cause
it's good. But if there's anything interesting in there, we'd love to see it. But
really isn't. I think the key point is, okay, it plays the files, and I think you can with a Windows machine, I know you can browse it through Windows Explorer, and you can actually edit and use it and interact with the files just like you would if it was local, just as if you was connected to a share on a server.
Sure, yeah.
Android, it at least plays back video in that same method way, but I'm not sure if I tried to store like a Word document or anything like that, whether it interact with it in the same way.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, do you think, I mean, can you use that as regular storage from a...
You might be able to, not something I tested.
Yeah. Okay.
Because as I said, the key thing was the extend video storage for my stepdaughter for her trips, and that was the whole point of it. And
yeah,
that's what I spent most of my time trying to test. And
it worked for her.
And it has worked for her.
Yeah, which means it was fairly easy for her to connect to and then get what she needed and watch that on the trip, right?
And the only thing I found with this is that if you're running when you charge it, you need at least 1 amp or better charger if you want to charge it and drive the functionality at the same time. Because if you put it onto a regular USB port, which only puts out 0.5 amp, or you use a 0.5 amp charger, it will run and it will extend out the lifespan, but it will still drain the battery internally, and once the internal battery goes down, it just shuts off.
Yeah. So does it come with a car kit, or was that something you had to get for it?
The card or the charger?
The device. Did it come with a charger that would fit in the car?
Okay. It came, when I opened the box, it had a teeny little questionable manual. If you want to use a manual, go find the one online. It's better than the one they ship in the box. But other than that, it was just the little white cube, and that was it. But to be fair, I mean, of all the chargers that I've purchased, battery chargers I've purchased, only one I've ever had that actually was able to be charged without having to supply your own charger, and that's because it had little plugs you plugged into the wall.
Right.
But everything else I've ever bought has always said, well, you have to use your own chargers to charge it. So...
Well, and you said in your post you got about 6 hours of battery life out of it under normal circumstances?
Yeah, I hooked it up to a laptop that I was running, and I streamed HD video off of it for some 6 hours. After the first couple light loops through the movie, I just kind of let it run, and then I came back to it a little over 6 hours later, and it was dead. So that was my extent of timing it.
Yeah, 6 hours isn't bad. That's not bad. For that little thing, that's not bad at all.
It got well over 12 when I had it on the 1.5 amp charger. My stepdaughter was in a hospital for a couple days, and I put it hooked onto a charger, and from 8 in the morning till 9 at night, it was still running. Yeah, but the next morning when I came in, it was dead. But
yeah. Well, that's good. And Kyle, you know, you do a lot of there in the store that you're in. You sell a lot of chargers, right? This is an area that I don't think a lot of people are aware of when they buy these USB chargers, that there's a difference, right, in the output of a lot of these different chargers.
Yeah.
I lost your volume here, Kyle. Hold on. Let's see. Let's see if Google will bring that up for me here. 1 second.
Do you want me to change the studio?
Yeah, change it back to voice for me. Or is it on?
It's on voice.
You got super quiet. Bill, is he super quiet for you too?
Yes, he is.
Okay, yeah, you're still loud for me. So do me a favor, go in there and see if you can amp up your microphone volume here for me real quick. See if we can get it. For some reason, I think maybe because, you know, Google amps it down a little bit when maybe you muted it, but
what about now?
It's still kind of
studio.
Still kind of quiet. Are you in studio mode or in live or in the voice mode?
Studio right now. I switched it from voice to studio.
Yeah, it's from voice to change it back to voice for me. Because voice will adapt, studio will not.
Okay.
So there we go.
Is that better?
That's a lot better.
Okay.
Yeah, voice will adapt for you. So.
Yeah, with because we, you know, your normal old car charger is just gonna put out like like a tiny USB power, but now we have, they call them premium chargers, whatever, you know. So that has like, it has enough power to charge your Android tablet, your phone, and it has an extra USB port on the top too, so you can actually charge one off of the micro USB and then put another cable. It'll charge, you know, your Galaxy S4 and your iPad at the same time, and it's fully powered to give you enough amps to charge. You're supposed to charge it faster too, so that's definitely nicer than the old car chargers that came with your flip phone, you know.
And I should be able to tell what the watt is, or what the what am I looking for? Is it volt? No. What's the?
Yeah, there's volts and amps, and then there's
So amps is what I'm looking for, though, right?
Yes, it is.
Bill, amps.
So yeah.
I should be able to look on the charger, and it'll say 0.5 or 1. Does it go? Does it go above that?
2.1, I think, is what iPad chargers are going for, running at now.
For a full charge.
For the chargers that you get for an iPad, especially the new, newer models. They will charge, I think, 2.1 amps.
Yeah.
But they're still running like 5 volts.
Okay. Yeah, it confuses the crap out of me. I just plug stuff in. I don't know. You know, it's like, okay, is this the right connector? Conk, and I call it good. I do try to, like with the Samsung stuff, I do try to keep the original stuff I get with it. I try to use those when I can. But they all get mixed up. You know, I have a handful of these chargers that I have to deal with. So, well, that's good. I'll have to look in the future there. So, what should I be for? So, from, and we'll talk about this later. But for my Galaxy S4, what should I be? What's the amperage I should be using on this thing when I charge it?
Whatever it came with.
You're probably good with one.
I don't. Yeah,
one
I don't.
Amp, you're probably good with
one amp. Okay.
I don't think the. At this point, I haven't seen any issues with using a more powerful charger. Should just charge it faster, and not actually damage it. Because that's, right. I mean, like the car charger I was talking about is more powerful than the one that came in the box, and I use it, so I don't know. I'm not an expert on that part.
Just charges faster.
Yeah. Well, what they do is that if you have a device that will draw 1 amp, but you have a 2 amp charger, it will draw 1 amp. But if you have, it will draw as much as the device wants to draw. So you're safe in that. And if you have a charger that only puts out half an amp, it will try and take everything that it can get from that charger, which is only half an amp.
Yeah. The chat room is saying now they know what happened to my phone. For sure. Well, this device, so this RavPower all-in-one Dynamite Gizmo, I think I paid $44 for that using this scholarship fund. I don't think it was very expensive at all.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
And actually, I had another question on that. Maybe I missed this part, but does it have any kind of like an Ethernet so you can, like, if you're at a hotel, you can plug into their wired Ethernet and go Wi-Fi out? It's not going to.
Nope. There's no
be an access
Wi-Fi. Wired connector. It's Wi-Fi only. It comes with a default. When you buy it, it has a default setting. And you just turn it on, and you just have to connect it to it by that particular name, and that's it. That's the only way you can connect to it is through Wi-Fi.
Okay. So get it in, set it up, set up all the stuff so you can connect to it. Then you kind of take it off your network. It can connect to your network if you want to, and then just take it with you. Take it on the road, use it in the car. In your case, you were in a remote location, so that was a good...
Yeah, we've used it in the car, we've used it in the hospital, we've used it in hotels.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You got some good use out of it. Very cool.
And the wife has even charged her iPhone off of it once.
Very nice. Did one charge drain it?
I'm not sure. I don't think she put a full charge on her phone on it, but I don't think she ran it dead either.
Does it
ran the RAV power dead. So yeah.
Does it have an LED indicator?
Gave it a boost to keep it from being completely gone.
Does it tell you when it's getting low on power?
In a way. The little LEDs blink in a different way depending on its discharge state. But it's one of those cryptic little blink twice, blink three times, whatever, and you pretty much have to have the manual out and say, okay, it's blinking three times. That means it's at 75%.
Yeah.
That's the one complaint that I would have about the display is that I wish it had a bar of little LEDs to tell you its actual charge state versus this little blinking.
Yeah.
Oh, cryptic way, but again, $45. You can't complain.
Right. Yeah. Like I like this. We've talked about this before, but I got this PowerRox. You know, this is the PowerRox Power Cube that I paid $40 for, which has been dynamite. You'll get up to 4 or 5 charges. Depends on what the device is. I've charged the Lumia with it. I've charged the GS2. I charged the GS4. It's been great. It's got an extra charger on the inside. It's got USB and micro in the micro. But it's got that nice little, hey, you've got 4 bars left. And when you use it, it goes down to 3, and then it goes down to 2, and then it goes down to 1. Really nice, good visual graphics to tell you kind of, hey, charge that thing.
Yep.
And it charges back up in a couple hours, and then I'm back on the road with it. And it actually, I wonder what the output is, because it did charge. I put it on my phone, and it charged that thing fast. I mean, it was maybe 2 hours, and that thing was back up to 100%. So that was, I really like this. PowerRox, you can go back. Again, if you're new to the show, just go to theaverageguy.tv, put in PowerRox in the search, and you'll see that Kerry Adams was on. We did a review of some of those. We talked about the PowerRox devices. And Bill, thanks for doing that. Again, that is all because of the generosity of you guys going out to theaverageguy.tv/Amazon. And when you make Amazon purchase, we've had some suggestions, you know, If your better half, your significant other, whoever's making the purchases at the house, if they, he, she, or however that works out, is making the purchases, set up a little, but you're the tech guy, right? Set up a little shortcut for them on their browser that goes, says Amazon on it, but then it goes to theaverageguy.tv/Amazon. That will automatically redirect them, and then the show picks up a little bit of credit for that. We turn that back around into what we call the Tech Scholarship Fund, and it allows me to do some things with folks in our community as well when we get opportunities to do that. And so, like I think I mentioned early in the show, I'm going to scholarship Kyle a new ATR 2100 because he comes on the show about every other month or so, and I want him to have a better mic. So we will do that as well. Well, Bill, thank you for doing that. Be sure to chime in here on the rest of the show anytime you've got something you want to say, okay?
Oh, well, trust me. I don't have no problem talking.
Sounds good. Kyle, I want to dovetail in a little bit. You're our mobile guy, and you do work in a mobile Best Buy, one of the not the kiosk, but it's a what do you guys call it?
It's a Best Buy mobile specialty store.
Mobile specialty, and it's where... Yeah. I went to a store in here in Omaha when I picked up my S4. I went to a store like yours to pick that up. Great experience. It was a very good experience. I like buying my phones at Best Buy. I'll be honest with you. I'm not just saying that because you're on the show, but I like that experience. Although I just bought one from the Sprint store the other day. That's where my son wanted to go, and we got that done. And we'll talk about some things I learned. But you are saying that some things are changing in the mobile industry, and I really noticed this when I went there. But I want you to talk about it first. So tell me what you know.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm just going to kind of start out at the beginning of all things cell phones, really, is, you know, when cell phones started, you know, and I don't know how long or what point this started, but I know the contracts have been going on, you know, at least since my dad's had cell phones, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago. But basically, you know, no consumers wanted to pay, you know, full price to own a cell phone. And so the carriers would make a deal with you and say, hey, if you sign up for this 2-year contract, you can get this phone for free or $50 or whatever. And they would subsidize the price of the phone for you. And so, you know, that's the process we've been using for years and years now. The cell phone companies kind of realized that, well, this isn't cool. We don't want to keep paying for phones like this for people. And consumers kept saying, we want to upgrade our phones faster, you know. And so really what they've started doing is they've started separating away the cost of the phone from the cost of your plan. And actually, you know, you've always been paying for this phone. You know, remember when before you had a smartphone, you'd go into the store and you'd buy a new phone to upgrade to a smartphone, and they'd be like, well, there's an extra $30 or whatever it was to add a smartphone. And they would say it's for the data, you know, and yes, technically there would be a line on your bill that said you now have X amount of data, unlimited 2 gigabytes, 3 gigabytes, whatever it was. You have X amount of data, and this is how much it costs you. Well, you know, in reality, I mean, yes, you were in a sense paying for the data, but in reality, mostly that extra fee was paying for the subsidized cost of your smartphone. You paid $100 for the phone or whatever you paid for it, and the phone really costs $600 or something. And so that's how they were, you know, and people would always be like, I don't want to pay for data, and I'm sick of this, and I have Wi-Fi, and well, now we've really kind of separated the cost of the phones now, and so all the cell phone carriers are jumping on board with this, and I don't know how long it's going to be. I mean, maybe eventually there won't be any more contracts at all, who knows. T-Mobile got rid of contracts completely, so there's no more contracts at all for them. And they kind of really started pushing, and who knows how really disruptive they've been. You know, you can kind of debate on whether it was actually them or just the industry was going to go that way without them, but T-Mobile really started pushing. So basically now, you know, all these commercials, and mainly I would say it's mostly AT&T and Sprint who I think are guilty of this, and they'll advertise a certain monthly rate plan on their on the TV commercial, where AT&T keeps saying, you know, $160 a month for 4 smartphones, and Sprint keeps saying $25 a month for up to 10 people on a family plan or whatever that is, you know. So
and this weird tiered pricing now that goes backwards, yeah. Right? The more phones you have, the cheaper the mm-hmm. your yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. So the thing that they don't tell you is that those prices, because for the last, like I said, 10, 20 years, when they quoted you a price and said, get this monthly deal on this phone, that included the subsidized cost of your phone. Well, those prices that they're advertising don't include your phone. So if you're a family of 4 and you see a commercial for AT&T for $160 for 4 smartphones and you walk in to buy that phone, you have 2 options. You can sign a contract, and then that adds an extra $25 a month per phone to your bill. So now you're back up to $100 extra to $260. Or you have the option to finance your phone, and all of them have their different names, whether it's Jump or Next or Edge or EasyPay, or those are all the different cell phone company names. You can finance your phone. And it's essentially just a credit card through the cell phone company, basically. You're just paying monthly installments with no interest to them. And so if you pick a cheaper phone, you might be at $15 a month. But most people are going to pick a smartphone that's going to add $25 to $30. So you do that 4 times, you're right back up to the $260 again. And the same thing with, you know, people see the Sprint plan and they're like, $25 a month, I'm going to get the family plan and sign up and all my buddies, and they'll come in, you know, and say, hey, $25 for each person, $50. Okay, well, yes, that part's true, but you still have to pay for your phones. And all of this, you know, you have the option of you can bring your own phone, you can sign a contract, you can do a financing, you can do all your options. Just if you sign a contract, it's going to add money, it's going to add cost to your plan. So and I've seen this a ton just where I work, is people coming in and they think that the price is one thing, and then we have to explain to them, no, it's actually hundreds of dollars more, you know, and that's frustrating. I think there is some good parts to it, though, and I think this is one where AT&T really has a big advantage, I think, because they use the GSM phones, those phones are everywhere in the world. And so you're allowed to bring your own phone. And so if you can get a phone cheaper, you're allowed to use that. And if you're on Sprint or Verizon, those are CDMA phones, and you can't even if you have another CDMA phone from another country, it has to be a Verizon or Sprint certified one to work on their network. So you have to they're, you know, that yes, Verizon is big and they have and they have tons of phones out there and the used market and everything, but you still have to buy an actual Verizon phone and you have still have to buy an actual Sprint phone to use on their network. Whereas with AT&T, you have that option of bringing your own phone from anywhere. And so for years and years, AT&T and Verizon have been neck and neck on pricing, just for a long time. But I think that now, and if you do buy your phones directly through them, it's still going to be fairly close. But if you can take advantage of buying, like we've talked about tons of times, like a Lumia 520 or, you know, any other phone or a Moto X or a Nexus 5 or any phone that's been priced a little bit better, because either, you know, with these new plans, you're paying for the actual amount of your phone. So instead of everybody on the account paying $30 a month every single month for data, if you decide to pick a cheaper phone, it's actually going to be cheaper for you. So there is some good news there in that part of it, but just the commercials are so deceiving, and it's kind of crazy. So
yeah, so our experience was we went in, my son Josh was due his upgrade, and he was like, Dad's time. You know, he had an old HTC, the one that was 3D, that was probably the only 3D
phone. Yeah, the Evo 3D, yeah.
Evo 3D is what he picked up a couple years ago, and it was pretty cool to watch. You know, there was like one movie that was made for it, right?
Yep.
I think it was Green Lantern or something like that. And he had that phone, it was time to upgrade. So we went into the store, and it was like, what are all these monthly, you know, what are these monthly amounts? How does this work? So Sprint had just changed over to this, and even the sales guys were a little confused on how it all worked. We broke out the brochure and we went through it, and they're like, and for me, it was all or nothing, right? You change over, and I'm on the old unlimited plan, so add a phone at the subsidized price, pay another $10 or $20 for data for each one of those phones. I mean, I'm paying $300 a month for five phones on my plan, so it's not cheap. And in fact, when we looked at switching over to that plan, it
probably way more.
No, it was actually a little bit less for me in that. But here's what I didn't like. The fact that, and I should have just, I'm paying for that subsidized phone anyway, right? But it was like, okay, wait a minute. So he's going to make a down payment, which was super cheap, whatever it was. And then you're going to roll the subsidized cost into my bill going, you know, from this point going forward. And so what happens when my wife and I's phone are up? Then we're going to have to do that all over again, and that bill is going to grow. I think that's where it starts getting you, is like it's cheap now. It was cheap because I'm just adding one phone to that payment. But as I get into successive years, now if we hold on to our phones, there was somebody in chat was saying, hey, does anybody not buy their phone or does not turn their phone in after 2 years? Most people do. So now Bill's shaking his head. You keep yours. What are you sporting right now, Bill?
Oh, I change them out as quickly as I can.
Oh, okay. So you're shaking your head. Yes, I do.
I don't keep them.
Yeah, I don't think most people do, you know, from that standpoint. And so, Kyle, I think that's where it starts getting expensive for me is when then, okay, my daughter's phone comes up for renewal, then my son, and then ours. And the closer those are together, the more, and you add those monthly payments then for that phone. And I'm like, well, can't I just pay for it all at once? Well, no, the system's not really set up to do it that way. You could call in later, and you have to tell the customer service people that payment is just for the phone. So it is kind of messy. There has been some changes. So if you're on Sprint, you've got some messiness there now. They allowed me to stay on my current plan, so I didn't have to make the move to the new plan.
So did they make you do and sign up for one of these monthly installments, or were you able to just upgrade?
I just upgraded. I was just like normal. I kept with my plan.
Yeah.
I bought a subsidized phone. He paid $150. You know, I think he got the Nexus 5. And so we got that phone. He paid the $150 for it. I'm paying the subsidy. You know, I am.
But your bill shouldn't change though, right?
Yeah, correct. Okay.
Yep.
Correct. Yeah. Bill, my monthly amount stays the same. So, yeah. So it's you have to be. It's crazy. This business is crazy. You know, back in the '80s, late '80s, early '90s, when I was a landline was, you know, it was $69 to have a landline, and you know, you couldn't just buy a phone and put it on a landline, and you know, I was getting these bills for $150. I was outraged that I had to pay this much for a telephone, right? And I worked that thing down to nothing with voice over IP, zero, right? And you know what I did? I just added a double payment of that on with cell phones. You know, it's like, and I do it willingly. It's kind of crazy what we've worked ourselves into. I would have never have done this in the 80s or 90s for my landline phone. I never would have paid this much. But for whatever reason, I'm willing to just fork over money. Like, I mean, it's a freaking car payment that I make for me. Now, as the kids depart, we are pushing that off onto them. You know, eventually we've had two leave and they have their own bills now. But it'll take a couple more years before the other kids drop off our plan. So very, very interesting that's happening. Well, let me tell my story here. So if you listen to the Home Server Show, homeservershow.com, on Tuesday I was complaining that my GS4 had bricked, not really bricked, but it wasn't charging anymore. And it just stopped, and it had come in a moment of an upgrade. And so I the weird thing about it is if I turned the phone off and I plugged it in, it would go through this weird cycle of, hey, you need to charge, I'm going to charge. Hey, you need to charge, I'm going to charge. And the phone would buzz every time it did that, right? Need to charge, I'm charging. Need to charge. Literally, about every 3 or 4 seconds, it would flip back and forth. At the end of the night, it would be fully charged. So it worked. Traded out the battery. That didn't help. My wife has a Galaxy S4 too. So I took it into the Sprint store today, and I was just like, hey, guys, can you kind of tell me, I mean, what are my options here? And so the guy's like, well, the tech can take a look at it. I think it's a part we can replace. And and I said, is it, you know, is it a warranty item or whatever? And they said, well, let's look at it, you know. Well, I must have set this in something where water made it into the, you know, like in the car or on something or on the counter or something, right? And sure enough, there was water damage. It had shorted out the plug that's in there. And he showed it to me, and I'm like, well, so what are my options? He's like, I'll just put a new one in there, but it's $75, you know. And I'm in the store, and I'm thinking, and I had just been talking to, let's see, who was I talking to on the Facebook page? One second here. I want to give some credit where credit is due. John Wills. And John was like, hey, Jim, I had that same problem, and I just replaced it for like $25. Sure enough, on Amazon, there's kits for anywhere from $10 to $25 that you can just change that port out, and it comes with all the tools that you need to take your phone apart and change it out. I probably could have done that, but you know what? My phone's fixed. And for me, it's just kind of worth it to get that. I know, Kyle, you cringed a little bit when I said I paid to have it fixed. You know, but that being said, it's done, right? I didn't have to send it off. I didn't have to send it to Samsung. I didn't. It did have some water damage, so they probably would have denied the, you know, any warranty work on it anyways. But yeah, you're shaking your head. Maybe not.
No, I mean, if there's actual water damage and you got out for $75, I don't think that's that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had been able to, you know, and like, you know, your other options probably, you know, you might have been able to get a warranty replacement for free if you had called Sprint's customer service, waited on hold, went through their troubleshooting. They mail you a phone, you mail the old one back, or that you do the same thing through Samsung. Both of those people may have been able to do it for free, but either way, you're mailing it, and you know, then it's just kind of, yeah, you know.
Yeah, Ted's saying the same thing in chat. He says, my work phone's a Samsung GS4. Replace the power module. Yeah, I think that's what it did, for about $15. Yeah, I found one on Amazon for $15-$20, whatever. I probably could have done that, and I just didn't. So that's just me. You guys can, you know, for me, it was worth it just to have it done. I dropped it off.
I wouldn't fault you, because I mean, it's something you live with. It's something you need to have, and it's like your car. I can take the time and spend a couple hours to change out the brakes on a car, but I can just as easily take it in to have it done by a dealer, and guess what? They're going to be standing behind it. If something goes wrong, they screw up, they have to deal with it. I don't.
Yeah, it's this week I have titled A Dollar Short. Because everything I've done has fallen short just a little bit. And it's like, oh, why, how come anything can't go right for me? I had visions of buying a part like this and just totally whacking my phone in the process, you know, and it was one of those things. It's like, okay, I've had enough this week. I dropped it off. There's a Chick-fil-A next door. I walked over there. I had some lunch. I read the newspaper. You know, here's another thing. I was amazingly disoriented when I was at Chick-fil-A without a phone. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm like, what do you do? Right?
Yep.
That's when you pull out the 520.
I should have taken the 520 with me. That would have been smart to spend some time on the Lumia 520. But I handed him my phone. This is a little disconcerting. I handed him my phone, and I'm like, oh, can I take one of yours? And the guy's like, no. I'm like, what am I going to do? So they had this thing called a newspaper. It's, you know, it's like a blog, but it's on paper.
Paper? Oh, what's paper?
Exactly. And I read this newspaper while I waited for them to fix it. I went back, and they had it done. And, you know, it was at the end of the day for me, hey, as a home tech listener, I just want to say, you know, if you're having problems with your phone, it does sound like these Galaxy phones are built in a way that you can change out some of these parts now. And maybe the average consumer, the average tech or above average tech guy, Ted being one of them, and John Wills being one too. John told me he did it as well on his Note 3, I think is what he said. Although that's a pretty new phone to be changing out a charger on. But it's all possible. I just chose not to. But the kits look cool. If you go to Amazon, use our affiliate link, theaverageguy.tv/Amazon. But it's kind of cool. The kit comes with about 3 screwdrivers that you need to be able to lift all that stuff off, pull that piece out. The part that he replaced, he documented on our Facebook group. So if you're interested in learning what he did, just head out to facebook.com/group/theaverageguy, or you can go to theaverageguy.tv/Facebook. And join that group, and it's really kind of cool. I thought, oh, I probably could have done that, but I didn't. So, all right, so that ends the saga. My phone works. It now charges. I'm back to the way it was before, although I do think I probably need to put a plug in there or something so I don't set it. I think what happened is I had some water in my car. I'd spilled something, and I set the phone down in that cup holder, and it just soaked up right into it because the rest of the phone was fine.
Well, that just means you need to get a GS5.
Yeah, well, maybe under
subsidy. Since they're supposed to be water resistant.
That would be nice. And maybe I need just a waterproof cover for it. Maybe that would have been the smart thing.
About $75.
Yeah, another $75. Right? Another $75. Kyle, real quick, you had in the notes here, you'd put a, and I'm intrigued, you've talked about this. And this is going to kind of be, we're going to shift gears here, a custom RSS feed with XML hosted on a Google Drive. Now, yep. One of the things, the reason I'm asking is because we always talk about MP3 hosting, right? This idea of being able to, where do you put our MP3s for podcasting, and can you create an RSS feed off of this? So walk me through this real quick of what you discovered, and then I'll ask some questions.
Yeah. So the first part is just the fact that you can host websites on Google Drive, and there's a link in the show notes, and if you do a Google search for it, you'll find a ton of articles telling you how to do it, but there's a super simple Google explanation on their support topic where it just says, you know, step one, create a folder, make it public. Step two, upload your HTML, JavaScript, or CSS. Step three, open the file and then click the preview button in step four, and then share the URL that it gives you. It's gonna go to a website that says www.googledrive.com/host, and then every person's folder that shared has this big long cryptic key, and then you can put, and then after that it'll take you to your page, and you can make if your first page is index.html, you don't need to add anything after the last slash. I like to not use index because then I can just go to that site and see my root folder of everything that's there, and then I make my main page, I just make it home.html. And so that's pretty cool that you can do that. And if you look at the next two links that are in the show notes, we'll show you. You know, you can just have, it just shows you, it looks like an FTP server, but it's just a list of here are the folders that are stored here on the web page. And you can see I have in mine, I have audio.
Let me flip over, Cal, let me flip over so folks can see what...
Do you want to put, you want me to share my screen?
No, I'll do it.
Okay.
There we go. You can talk it through while I, hold on, okay, put mine in focus. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, so I have a folder for audio, a folder for CSS for my custom style sheets, I have a folder for images, and I have a folder for RSS that hosts the RSS feeds are in XML format, and then I have an HTML document. And I have several websites. If you go to, actually, if you go to bit.ly/KyleJWX, I've actually linked all my hosted sites there so I can get to them easily.
bit.ly/Kyle. What was the last part?
JWX.
JWX.
And this link is, this is to one that I took, and this one just defaults to go to index.html, and then you can look through and see, you know, I have a link to the actual site, and then I below it I have the index page, so you can see the structure, essentially the structure that I've created for that website. Most of those are for Google Drive. Some of them are for, like, Twitter and stuff like that. But and so that the entire web page that Jim's showing there is, you know, all the boxes. Those are custom style sheet. What do they call it? There's like padding and margins and different categories that they put them in. But yeah, you can put audio files, you can embed video files, you can use any HTML will work. They don't let you do PHP, but HTML, JavaScript, and they don't list XML as is working, but it works fine.
And don't blow past that, because PHP does not allow you to do WordPress, right? So you can't load a WordPress instance.
No, it's strictly for static websites. That's all you're going to do. Now, you can use a separate third-party static website generator to throw the files there. It's very cool if you just want to get the hang of hand-coding your own website and seeing what it will look like. And I like how the boxes and stuff helps me keep track of it. That's how it's in the CSS document. For the style sheet on the website. But then basically what I did was I just used, let me go back to my links here. I just did some research. W3 Schools is another link in the notes there. And that just teaches you how to do the absolute basics of everything related to almost any kind of coding, whether it's HTML, CSS, JavaScript, XML. And when you're in the XML section, you can learn how to make your own RSS feed. Can you go and click on one of those. If you open it in...
Which one do you want me to click on?
Click on, I think it's 3 is the one for RSS.
Podcast RSS. Okay.
Yeah. And then just click on, like, any one of those 3 links there. We'll do the same thing. So when you click a link in Chrome, it doesn't really... it just displays the source code. If you do it in Internet Explorer, it's going to show, like... an actual Internet Explorer has an actual thing to show, kind of like it lays out an RSS feed. But basically, I can copy that. Just if you wanted to get those podcasts that I uploaded there, you could just copy the link right out of that browser and import it into your podcatcher of choice, and it would feed those down to you. And it's just... it's just hand coding your XML document. I just went to the W3 Schools and I went to their section on XML and RSS is a type, is a custom way of doing, or not custom, but it, RSS is created by an XML file. So I just copied from W3 Schools and then I just took out their content and inserted mine, and then I made a reference back to the audio file that I uploaded into the folder.
So is this long cryptic name, is that the folder name?
Yeah, that's the part, that long cryptic part, that's the part that Google Drive does. And any site that you host on Google Drive, that's the part that they do.
And do you know if there's any terms of service that you'd be violating when you... So say you do, you're a podcaster like I am, and I mm-hmm. want to start putting my files out here, mm-hmm. and use Google Drive as the host, right? Media yep. host is always the most super expensive part right. of this deal.
Right.
Do you know?
So I don't... I have not researched that part. My guess is going to be that whether it's Google Drive, Dropbox, SkyDrive, any of those, they authorize you to use them under normal load. And the only real evidence I have on this is one time I was watching Twitter, and I think Paul Theriot tweeted out that he had updated his book, and he had the PDF was hosted. He tried it on SkyDrive and on Dropbox, and so many people clicked on those links that it shut down his links to those. It just kind of overwhelmed. They weren't ready for that right. amount. It right. wasn't supported. So I'm guessing, I haven't heard this or tested this or anything. I'm guessing that eventually if you used it for a large volume, that Google Drive would probably sense that there's too much traffic and it would either shut itself down gracefully and just pop up a warning page and say, this user has... you know, ran 5,000 gigabytes out of his right. server, you know, out of his Google right. Drive this month, you know. So yeah. But for what I'm doing, for hosting it for myself, it's perfect because, I mean, as one person, I'm not even going to come close to doing that. Right. Have I kind of explained how that part works?
Yeah,
or what,
no,
you,
I think
do
so.
You have questions about where I'm going with that?
No, I think it makes sense. I mean, it's a really geeky way of doing it, right? But it does allow you. No, it does allow you some flexibility to use yeah. Google Drive for more than just storage.
Yeah, and I the first like I said, the first thing I started doing with Google Drive was just to host a website and see what it looks like and to play around with the HTML documents and that stuff. And then I thought, man, I wonder if I can do this. And I would go and look at the actual and read the code of the RSS feeds from Jim's site or from, you know, Marketplace or whatever podcast you're listening to. You can go and on their web, when it's, you know, if you go to their website and click on the link that says this is our RSS feed, well, you can view the source code for that and see how they're doing it and figure in how to get images and stuff. Actually, if you go to, if you're in the XML code for the podcast for the feed there, it will, if you go to, I think it's the bottom one, the Tabor, yeah, that one. If you're in that code, I actually figured out how to add a JPEG so that when you download that one into your phone or whatever, it will, that image will show up as the image. So you can learn and customize, and pretty much my learning on all this coding is just W3 schools, and you just follow their tutorials and copying what other people have coded on their sites for their XML documents. So, and then the other thing that was I thought was super cool was on the home server show, one of these guys I just ran into this post randomly. I didn't even know anybody else was doing this, but he, Gavin Campbell, he figured out a way to write a script that will automatically when he inserts an audio file into a folder, he has it set up so that his script will automatically create the XML entry, because if you look on what Jim's sharing there, each thing has an item, and then it has a title, and then link, and then description. Those are like the four building blocks you need for each entry that you have. So his automated thing, I don't even know how a script works, but his automated thing will, when you insert an audio file there, it will create that code essentially in the file, and then he can just download it. And he didn't put his on Google Drive, I don't think, but he would just, and he actually put his music there so that if he can only access it on his Wi-Fi, home Wi-Fi, but then his music essentially acts like a podcast and will auto sync with his iPhone or any other RSS feeder.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool.
There's some interesting implications for that, just as you think about it. Yeah. So, it would be great. I would think it would be great if you could get around the... I mean, I'd love to see it become a place you could do podcasts out of, and Google would say, hey, we don't care how much bandwidth you use.
Yeah.
You know.
And I mean, I don't know if there's any way to test that, if you just want to.
And then they lock up my Google account.
Well, and, yeah, you know. create a separate Google. They give you 15 gigs for free, and then their storage is pretty cheap. So I don't know if you can throw it up on Twitter and say, everybody hit this file as hard as you can and see what happens.
That would be interesting. See if you can lock
but yeah,
up that
there's
account.
Most places don't let you host raw HTML files, and so that let me play around with it. And you can put a video up there and embed video in your HTML and embed audio in your HTML. So it's completely raw storage, completely open to whatever you want to stick there. So
okay, very cool, good find. That's interesting. I think for those of us who like to code, I'm not one of them. But for those of us who like to dig in there, and that might have some interesting implications. So they try to keep that stuff as fairly open as they can. So interesting. All right, good stuff, Kyle. Anything else you want to add on that topic?
On that one, no, not really. Just follow the links and
very
ask
good.
Questions.
Hey, quickly, you had and let's do this quick. But you had we'd had Amber Gott on a couple weeks back talking about LastPass. In the pre-show, you had mentioned to me, you're like, there when you talk about the average consumer, and they think about this having another application to manage all their passwords and spending $1 a month to be able to do it, right? Which is really what you need for if you're going to get it on the phone, you got to pay the $12 price in it. Your kind of thinking is, oof, right? That's still too much for the average consumer. You think?
Yeah. I mean, the password management and for most Americans today, I think is just horrible. And I mean, most people come in and upgrade an Android phone after 2 years, and we're like, okay, are you ready to sign in with your Google account? And they're like, what's a Google account? And I'm like, have you downloaded any apps? And I'm like, well, if you've downloaded an app, you have a Google account. And they're like, I don't think I have one. I'm like, well, you probably have one. And then I'm like, do you remember the password? No. Can I just create a new one? Okay, they just create a new one. I mean, that happens every day at work. So I think, you know, if Christian was here to talk about cybersecurity or something, he would be flipping out about this.
Jumping out of his skin?
Yes. But here's the thing. The information that most people want to back up is their contacts and their pictures. I mean, that's pretty much what it comes down to. So, I mean, I guess there's some privacy concerns there, but overall, I mean, if we can find out a way to do that, you know, even if, you know, if their password has to be 123456789010, that's not, I mean, those pictures probably aren't the most, we're not talking about the super sensitive, you know, information that most people, you know, obviously if you're doing it at your bank account, you need to have a better password, but for your backing up your phone and backing up your computer and stuff, and being able to remember a password for that, it's pretty frustrating to kind of just work with people on that. And I did see Verizon is adding, 25 gigabytes of cloud backup is included now with their thing, which it's always great if you can tie it to the cell phone subscription because they're paying for that. They already have a password. They're already attached. They're already in that system. So if you can say, just use that, well, then if they switch to a different company, well, then what happened to their data? You know, well, it's gone. So it's, you know.
Right. It is still kind of messy.
Yeah. And
it is. Don't let's not cover two, but it is cloud. You know, when I was having problems with my phone, I wiped it out. I thought, hey, maybe an update screwed it up. And so I wiped it out and started over. And then it was like, hey, do you want to sign back in? And so I put my Google account in. And, man, that has gotten good on these phones, though. Mm-hmm. The backup, I mean, it brought every – now, it took an hour, and the phone was like, the temperature of the sun hot while it was doing that. Mm-hmm. But it brought it back, and it brought all the apps are back. I mean, it was crazy good. Bill, any suggestions from a password? You got any opinions on password management for the average guy?
I actually been using a application called Keeper on my cell phone, which you enter the passwords, it encrypts them, and it actually can back them up to storage on the internet. And if you have, you'd have to pay them like $10 a month, $10 a year per device.
Yeah. And I think that's Kyle's, the average consumer just goes, although they pay a ridiculous amount for that phone. And then they won't pay $10 a year to just make sure it's backed up.
Yep.
Kyle, that's probably the problem. That's probably the problem. Yeah.
I mean, it's just a simple little manager program, and it's worked nice for me for 2-3 years now. So.
Okay. Well, what I want to do is throw it out to you guys, you the listener. So we want to engage you a little bit. If you are, and I'm not so interested in backup. We cover a lot of that on Home Server Show stuff. We talked about it. We talk about kind of backup methodologies and stuff there. I'm more interested in password management and what you think of that and what you're doing. And so if you're doing something other than LastPass, I know a lot of us use LastPass to make that work. But if you're using something other than LastPass, maybe you're creative, would you call that in and let me know what you're doing? So call us, 402-478-8450. The other night it was funny. I was actually at my computer when somebody was calling in and leaving a message, and a little thing popped up to tell me a call was coming in. So it's pretty cool. And we're going to take some – you're going to listen to some calls here in just a second. But 402-478-8450. 50 and tell me what you're doing for password management. It just would be good if you maybe you got a scheme. If you've, I'm sure you've heard Christian on this program before. He's got a crazy. He has a crazy methodology in the thing that he does, and I've had him explain it to me like 4 times. I still don't completely understand it, but it's all good stuff. So, okay, let's. In fact, Ted is here because Ted was one of the guys that called in. And Ted, I'm going to botch your name, so I'm going to let you introduce it on the. On the clip that we have there, and so a couple guys called in this week. I told you guys I would play those calls, and then we'll talk. We'll kind of come in for landing on this. So let me play these right now. Ted, thanks for calling in, by the way. And here's Ted's message.
Hello, Tim. This is Ted Cicados. We had an exchange via Twitter some time ago. I'm the founder of System Admin Day, which is the last Friday of July. I'm avid listener of the Home Server Show and Home Tech. I'm a binge listener. I subscribe via iTunes, and I have far too many interests and far too many podcasts that I subscribe to. So I collect up about 6 to 8 episodes of the Home Server Show and Home Tech, and then listen to them back to back. Reason for my call is I heard you talking about the Sinclair. I had one of those, and I enjoyed hearing you mention the Sinclair mini little computer with the stupid keyboard. I have a funny story that has to do with data recovery over several decades. Back in the mid-80s, when I was getting married, I used a TRS-80 computer to manage a database of my tests, and as the wedding progressed and as the wedding was over, I added additional columns to the database to keep track of gifts. So the data was stored on a cassette tape, and the TRS-80 was long gone, and I had a printout of the final tally, the final report of our wedding guests, and At my 25th wedding anniversary, I had pulled out all of our wedding photo albums, and I had the printout. And at the 25th wedding anniversary party, somehow or another, the printout got lost, and it was the only copy that I had. And we were quite disappointed that we had lost that one and only hard copy printout. But I was able to find the cassette tape from the TRS-80. So I found a TRS-80 computer that had a cassette interface. I was able to load the data from the cassette tape that had been sitting in the desk for like 25 years. And then from there, I figured out how to use a terminal program to spit it out the serial port, and I plugged a cable from the TRS-80 into my Windows speech computer with Office. And I used, I used PuTTY. And was able to transfer the data over the serial port as a CSV file. And then I opened it in Excel 2013 and saved it as an Excel file, so I was able to get my wedding guest list restored from a 25-year-old TRS-80 cassette tape. I was quite proud of myself. So anyway, love your show, and listen to every episode. Thanks very much. Bye.
TRS-80 recovery.
I don't even know what that is.
That was my first computer.
Really?
Yeah. And Model 3.
And you kept the data on the cassette tape?
No, we actually had two floppy disks. Yeah, and 48K memory.
I've used the floppy disk before, but this other stuff, I don't know. I listen to music on cassette tapes.
Well, that's retro right there.
Yeah, you used to be able to, Kyle, you used to be able to store data on cassette tapes. That was the only way that's the only way it worked. Hold on, I've got one more of these to play. Ted, thanks for sharing that. That is dynamite. It's PuTTY that he used. I think that's what he said. And so PuTTY is like a database application that allowed him to go through the serial port, pull that information into Windows, and then drop that into Excel and get that guest list back. I listened to that a couple times because I edited it a little bit. If you call and leave a message, so 402-478-8450, it's everywhere at theaverageguy.tv, so if you can't remember it, head out there and get it. But as I was listening to it, I just smiled every time. I thought, Kyle, as you were talking about hacking on Google Docs, you know, the Google Drive, and you're doing this stuff, this was a retro hack like I haven't heard in a while. So, Ted, nice work, and I know he said he didn't even have the cable. He had to make the cassette cable to make it work into the serial port. That is dynamite. Yeah. So PuTTY's a terminal program. It's So awesome stuff. And that's the kind of stuff I'm looking for you guys to call in. It's good. You know, Kyle, you're not our demographic, by the way, but so thanks for hanging out with us. You know, it's more like Bill and I, and we have these old stories to tell. And so, but Kyle, I appreciate you hanging out with us. I've got one more that I want to play this week. We got a note from, he'll tell you here. No, he doesn't. I don't know who this is from, so you'll have to send it in. I didn't get enough information. I guess I could have texted him back and asked his name, but he's an avid listener as well, and he'll probably let me know. But Christian and I on Cyber Frontiers, so if you haven't listened to that yet, it's hard not to. It's in the feed. I kind of force you to listen to it if you're listening to the Home Tech feed. But Christian and I have been doing Cyber Frontiers, and we talked about honeypots the other day, and this is what the caller had to say.
Hey guys, just heard the latest episode of Cyber Frontiers, talking about the data breach at UMD, all that other stuff. The thing that really piqued my interest was the do-it-yourself honeypot at home, and whether or not, you know, you guys are saying whether or not that's even practical, or, you know, should the home user even be interested in that. And I'd have to say that that's something I would really be interested in, you know, in doing. I'd actually never considered that beforehand. I actually should be. For the more advanced users who might be running servers at home, whether it's a Windows Home server or it's a Linux box, you know, serving up files, you know, a free NAS device, anything like that, those devices can be, you know, if someone goes and breaks into your network and, you know, gets into those devices, they could be using your own gear to serve up stuff, and then next thing you know, you got the cops, you know, breaking down your door because you're serving up, you know, God forbid what, you know. So I would be rather interested in hearing on, you know, on do-it-yourself honeypots at home, you know, or at least kind of your guys' take on it, you know. That's something that I'm actually going to be looking into now, and I don't know, I might actually be implementing that soon, considering that I've got a home server. I've got a couple of Raspberry Pis running stuff servers, you know, that are connected out to the internet, you know, and then you have all these connected devices at home, the Internet of Things, and, you know, hearing in the past of refrigerators serving emails, spam emails. Yeah, I think as we become more and more connected at home and our devices become more advanced, we need to really pay attention to what they're doing and, you know, and be able to, you know, and proactively protect ourselves from anything that, you know, might happen to them. So just, you know, wanted to thank you guys for the good episode. thank you for bringing up stuff that never really considered in the past. And I've got some research to do, and I just want to hear your guys' take on it. All right, keep up the good work.
All right, and so if that was your message, I didn't get any information on who you were. If you do call me, leave your tell me your name so we can track you back down, but I appreciate that call. Honeypots were something we talked about on Cyber Frontiers 2. Head out to theaverageguy.tv and just type in CF002, and that'll get you right there in the search if you want to find that. Kind of an interesting topic, and we won't necessarily rehash that here. I will make sure we play this on Cyber Frontiers as well. Christian will love that, but I wanted to put that into this group. That's the kind of information we talk about on Cyber Frontiers. It's really turning out to be a pretty cool podcast. Christian's got some guys lined up and some news even on what's going on there in the University of Maryland, some things he can and can't say. So we have another episode coming up either tomorrow night or next Friday. I think we're going to do it next Friday. He's on spring break, and we'll catch him in Buffalo and get that done as well. I want to remind you, Ted also, he's the founder of System Admin Appreciation Day. That's July 25th. 2014. It's the last Friday of last Friday in July every year. That's a recognized day, and it's a good time to bring maybe some Mountain Dew and some pizza to your system admin on that day, right? So you can celebrate it that way. Head out to sysadminday.com. There's a lot of information out there. I want to thank Ted for calling in and being a part of the show. It's just great to get two of those messages in a week, and yeah, I could have spread them out over the last couple weeks, but that's not me. I'm just gonna play them. So, guys, Kyle or Bill, any comments on the calls or anything you wanted to add before we kind of run into post show?
Nope.
So Bill's good. Kyle, you good? You're muted, my friend.
Yep. But I'm good, so.
All right. Sounds good. I was reading your lips that way. But we will remind folks, we'll stay around for some post-show. I get to do some live interviews tonight out of Singapore at 10:30 Central. So I can't stay around too long because I got to start firing up those engines. But for the Gallup podcast that I do, which is kind of fun, that continues to go very, very well. Coaching.gallup.com. If you want to see what I do for my day job or one of the side jobs, that's probably a better way of saying it, one of the side jobs that I do. For my day job, head out to coaching.gallup.com, and if you have any questions about that, of course, you can always contact me. We're out here Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, just about every week, and I was telling the guys we got some cool stuff coming up here, including if you Google On Air Player and find them on Facebook. They got some interesting things going on. I have one of their chief guys coming out to talk about what they're doing. And then Rennie found this company called Mover.io, Mover.io. They'll move up to 10 gig of data around for you between your cloud accounts, and that data never hits your local ISP, which in some countries where you have a cap, that's pretty important. And there's some things that they do with that. And by the way, if you use Copy as one of the destinations, it's free. You don't get charged for that. So that's Eric Warnke from Mover.io. He is going to be on March 27th on Air Player. Daniel Voki from On Air Player will be on March 20th. These are all 2014 dates. Next week's special guest, a guy that I met at a conference, Mike, and I have Binko because that's what he goes by, but he'll be on the show to talk about a little about Windows Phone development and some of those other pieces. He's kind of a developer, and I wanted to get it. He was a super interesting guy, so I'm going to have him on for the first 30 minutes of the show next week, and we'll talk about that as well as all the other things that we talk about here on Home Tech. And I want to thank Bill Rockhold and Kyle Wilcox for coming out tonight. Bill, thanks for being a recipient of the scholarship fund and doing a nice job on the review in the post. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you. You're welcome.
And Kyle, always great to have you. We always have to kind of work this around your schedule. Thursday nights are not always open, so I thanks for being around and watch. Send me your email or send me your mailing address. We're going to get a ATR 2100 out to you in the mail that way. So
I
want to have you on. Thanks for coming around tonight, guys. Stay around for the post show. We'll be back next Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern. Good night, everybody.